Welcome to Wisdom Talk Radio, a collaborative community of explorers in conscious living.
One thing that we at Wisdom Talk Radio hold really dear is that each of us is on an inner journey. It may not sometimes feel like that. We may get so caught in our everyday life, but the truth is that that's still going on. And it's ours alone. But there's always an essence that connects us. We can speak about it as a search or a desire for love or to be loved, or as a process of remembering who we really are, as a connection with the divine. But if you've ever struggled to reconcile a sensing of the infinite, of the divine, of presence, with doubt or fear that's there, or if you've ever felt lost or alone, the conversation with my guest today is for you. And welcome. I'm Laurie Seymour, host of Wisdom Talk Radio and CEO and founder of the Baca Institute, home of the quantum connection process. Head to the Baca Institute to discover your quantum connection with your inner guidance by taking the quantum connection quiz. We're each designed to directly connect with source in our own unique way. And knowing what your own style is the first step in aligning with your inner guidance at a deeper level than you ever thought you really could. And really, that is the secret to, I could say to everything, but certainly to creating what you truly want in your life. My guest today is Maitreyi Mann Nolan, who is an award-winning author, psychologist, and spiritual teacher who has developed a worldwide following bringing forth the deep wisdom that manifests to her both through her inner guru, Baba, and in her teacher, the renowned Indian mystic, Sri Sri Anandamurti Baba. Her story is beautifully told, and really beautifully told, in her new book, Into the Heart of the Infinite, a spiritual memoir of an extraordinary mystical journey. Welcome, Maitreyi Ma. I am really thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here with you.
Thank you. So before we started, we were both acknowledging how self-doubt slash fear, lack of trust, however we want to call that, has been something that both you and I have experienced in our life. And we could talk about that probably for the whole time. But to begin with, what would you say has been your biggest struggle in the transformation of consciousness? Like, what's been your path, speaking into a larger picture of being able to deal with self-doubt, with fear, with stepping outside of the proverbial box?
It has been a struggle for me, and there have been times when that struggle has been a crisis. And both in my younger years and then later when my spiritual master died and I was guided to teach, and I didn't feel quite worthy. So for me, I think that the big struggle actually was that all my life I had doubts. When I was young and I went to school in Southern Illinois, mm-hmm. Nobody heard inner voices except crazy people, right? That's right. The only thing I thought. So when my guru came to me internally and my guide, and I started receiving guidance, part of me was madly in love with this being who I saw these divine qualities in. And part of me was in fear and in doubt. Because, you know, this isn't normal. And at my normal reality that I had defined, and I'd never heard of anything like this. So I think I started my spiritual path without in a place of lack of knowledge and understanding. It just came, right? Mm-hmm. And so I did some things the hard way because of that. And I think that doubt and fear were part of it. I was afraid of my inner experience. And I think even as a young child, I had psychic and mystical experiences, and I felt divine presence. But I always separated my outer life, which I called, and with other people, which I called people world.
Uh-huh.
You read
that's
my
better, book. You know, that's better than reality.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had, when I was a kid, I had this thing called people world, and that's where I interacted with other people. And then I had nature and animals and spirit and inner stuff. And in people world, I always, I think I split the two from an early age, you know, that there was my whole inner world, mm-hmm. and my spiritual life. And then there was people world, where I analyzed people and I saw whether the things you're supposed to do to be accepted by other people and to mm-hmm. be okay. And I figured out how to do those and I did them, but they weren't me. They were me being somebody who other people could appreciate, right? And so I think I made a split between my inner and outer, and that was a big issue in my life that years later, when my guru asked me, I got guidance about teaching, about carrying the flame, the guru shakti, and bringing this energy forward. What came up is that I had all my life kept my inner relationship with Baba, my spiritual guide and guru, and my inner psychic experiences and things, all I had separated it out from my external life. I had a great external life. I was quite good at a bunch of stuff, you know. I was a successful psychologist and had two children and a husband and a home in the suburbs. And you know, I did it all, right? But when I was confronted with message to teach, because all those years my inner guide had taught me and mm-hmm. never asked anything of me. And then when this time came, when my physical guru left his body and I was confronted with teaching, mm-hmm. you know, I went through a huge denial process and my fear just rose up. I just said, no, me, you know,
yeah.
no, this mm-hmm. is somebody else we're talking about, not me, you know, and I have all my own problems and this and that. No, I'm not a teacher. And and I was guided that this Shakti of the Guru would manifest through me, but it would take time, that there would be time. So there was nothing visible. There was nothing to prove that what I was receiving internally was actually real. So
what would have convinced you? I mean, at that time, when you say there was nothing to no proof.
Well, I think if the flow that I received later were there, but it couldn't be automatically there. It had to mature within me.
Yeah.
Or if there were, I don't know. I think what it did is my guru's guidance confronted me with myself.
Mm-hmm.
The split that I'd made of my very private, you know, now I wrote a book about it all, but at that time, very private spiritual life. And, the separation I kept and also my sense of inadequacy that I was very attached to, you know,
mm-hmm.
when we really get down to what are our real attachments, sometimes they're not what we think, you know, mm-hmm. they're, mm-hmm. I felt like I'm not worthy. That was a big attachment of mine is that, mm-hmm. no, this can't happen to me. And so I went into denial as a result of my self-doubt and my fear. And then I started having panic attacks because of the internal conflict that created. And that went on for about 3 months. And then finally, I just accepted what I was being told and went, well, maybe I'm crazy, but I need to do this, you know. And when I surrendered to that and I began to meld my internal life into my external life to be expressed, then things changed. But that was a great, I would say, dark night of the soul for me, working with doubt and fear, self-doubt, and lack of trust in the divine, lack of trust and guidance, which I think is all. I don't think these are my unique problems. Part of the human condition, as you said earlier, you know, it's part of the human condition, part of what we face. I've always said the spiritual path is not for the weak of heart.
Absolutely. Yep. I have said something similar to that. It's true. The path for me, I think of it as inner research is not for the faint of heart.
Yes.
Because when we're really feeling.
Yeah, it requires you looking at yourself. It requires dealing with your demons, your deep mental tendencies, your attachments. Mm-hmm. We have these concepts, ideas, even if they're like mine was, feelings of inadequacy, self-doubt. That's an attachment, just like, you know, any other attachment. And those end up being really core attachments, I think, for a lot of us, all of those kinds.
It's true.
I love the quote of Nelson Mandela, which was, you know, he was talking to a group of people and said, which of you, at a class, which of you will be the leaders of tomorrow? I may be slaughtering this, but it was something like this. Uh-huh. Which will be the leaders of tomorrow? And you know, nobody wanted to raise their hand. Nobody wants to think, oh, I'm so great. Yeah. But he said, but your unwillingness to acknowledge your own capacity limits what can be.
Yeah.
And I may be slaughtering his words, but there was something to that effect.
But the feeling of that feels very true.
Yeah. And so it's like we need to be able to connect with the infinite. We need to be able to surrender into and accept that divine presence and accept that in ourselves as well as in all beings.
So let me talk with you about that. I'm in the middle, actually, towards the end of writing my own book around separation, around forgetting that original connection that we have, where we felt so loved, where we were love, where we were of the divine, and we knew that. And yet coming into form, into embodiment, by its nature, we forget that. And so that whole process of lack of trust, of self-doubt, seems to me to be a kind of arrogance, almost an arrogance of saying, well, yes, but, you know, how could this possibly be? Because I'm just who I am.
Right.
Rather than surrendering into something that is bigger than who we think we are.
Right. And so humility becomes a defense. It becomes an ego defense.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to equate humility with arrogance, but it is in a certain stage. And from my inner guide, I kept getting at that point, are you unwilling to give love and to serve people because you need to hold on to this, in a sense, false sense of humility, you know, that bars you from doing the work. And I realized that was my defense, you know?
Mm-hmm. Was it a defense of being seen, being out there? What was it a defense against?
Against failure, against being seen, being out there, and somebody not liking what I'm doing, right? Being disapproved of, mm-hmm. right? You know, which I think is another really basic fear that most of us have, that other people are going to disapprove of us and somehow we won't be worthy, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And so rather than stand out in a crowd, and I think this is what Nelson Mandela was talking about. We want to be humble. We don't want to stand out. We want to just be part of the crowd so that nobody will attack us. Nobody will question us. Nobody will challenge us.
Yeah. And in that, we deny who we are. And we deny God.
Yeah.
We deny our own light.
Exactly, because that light does stand out. And the light, letting the divine flow through. I think there's a process that we begin meditation, like the Kundalini Shakti rises up. Mm-hmm. But then there's another process that like a hole in the clouds where the sun shines down and you see the rays of the sun coming down. Mm-hmm. Divine grace flows down into us and through us into the world. And when we let go into the divine, we let go into the opening to that grace.
Yes.
So that it can flow through, so that we can feel it in ourselves and share it.
And that becomes, for me, the doubt was, could I trust that that was real? Yeah. That was always my question. Could I trust that? And yet what I came to was that the trust happened for me in how it felt in my body. In other words, I just started paying attention to what I call the feeling body. And that was love. That was all I felt, was self-love. No judgment. And the other, when I doubt, was filled with judgment about myself, about the world, but mostly about myself.
Yes, yes, that's so true. That's really true. I do find that's self-judgment. And it's also, I'm trying to think for myself, what is it that I think we may suffer from the same problem, which is an abundance of intellect, actually.
Yes. Know? Oh, yes. Oh, my teacher always was like, oh, God, you're just overthinking everything.
Exactly. So abundance of mental activity, right. You know, and those of us who are mental into education, we have a little bit more problem than people who are very simple in their life, you know, in that the mind becomes this big barrier of, well, let me analyze this and to see if this fits in with this and that. And it doesn't always, because the divine, one thing that my inner guide, Baba, always told me is that he said for years to me, you're causing yourself a lot of difficulty because your understanding of things, your mind is not capable of understanding your experiences at this point. You don't have the capacity, right? Because I didn't have the knowledge base. I didn't have the understanding.
And
you know,
and
now.
And you needed to understand.
Right. And I needed to know. I needed to. Right. I had to understand this with my intellect. Right. And my intellect just wasn't getting it because I didn't have the cultural. I didn't have the tools, really. You know,
you could only know what you already knew. You couldn't step into the unknown through mental processes.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. Totally. So to step into the unknown is not just, and to step into something larger than your intellect, intellect can't contain it. You know, we have a basic human, in our basic human condition, we grab for what keeps us safe, what improves our life, and we push away that which is, harmful to us in any way, right? And so we try to live the best life we can by grabbing what we need and getting rid of that which would harm us in any way. And this is the basic human condition, but it also leads to suffering.
Yes.
It is also our condition of suffering. And when we go onto the spiritual path, I think we try to use the same approach. Let me grab God. Let me grab divine presence. Let me grab divine love. I want to feel that. Well, it doesn't work. It will slide through your fingers, right? You know, it's just you can't grab it. And so the process really begins to be one, and this is with the intellect too, with those of us who are a little heavy on the intellect, is to let go.
Mm.
Of what you think you know, let go of what you think you believe, let go of who you think you are. And for me, I think it was that surrender that was needed to be able to get through my own barrier to uniting my inner life and my outer life and going, well, you know, some people may like it and some people may not, but this is who I am. This is the way I connect with divinity and whatever anybody thinks of it, right? And so to get to that stage required surrender. It required letting go, right? As long as I was trying to control the situation, mm-hmm. as long as I was trying to make it so that it would be the outcome I wanted,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't work.
Yeah, so that was one of my things is wanting to control. Not so much other people, although it could come out that way, but it was about my own experience and yes. my own safety. And that yes. part of the brain, the amygdala, that wants to keep us safe, doesn't have the capacity for discernment. It doesn't know about letting go into the unknown. It doesn't know about surrender into something that could be far grander than what it already knows.
And I think for the basic body-mind structure, when it's not familiar with it,
mm-hmm.
letting go into the infinite is, that's scary.
Mm.
And people hit the existential void. Right. They hit the... Oh my God. Ah, you know, it's just too big, too scary, too whoa. The universe is really large and scary. And where's my couch? And turn on the TV. let's not think about that, yeah. right? You know, it can be frightening.
Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking, wait, I'm sorry to interrupt, and I don't want to lose this thread.
Yes.
Because I'm thinking, I'm having the sensing from what you're saying and tracking that it's when we try and understand, when we might have an experience of unity, we might have an experience of presence coming into us. And when we try and make sense of that, and sense meaning with the mental constructs, that's where we get scared because it's impossible
scared.
To do. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We get scared by something greater than ourselves, something that doesn't fit into our belief systems. And I think that's where I really had a problem. And Baba was always saying, you're not capable of understanding your experiences at this point. Just stop. You know, you're
stop
just
them.
making yourself miserable, worrying about it. You know? And it was totally true. And I made myself miserable a lot, worrying about things that I didn't need to worry about. I just didn't have the information. I didn't have the input to understand.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that happens and we get scared mm-hmm. and we have experiences that are beyond our mental comprehension. And it's just, then we want to shut down from that because it's frightening sometimes. But
if we can hold it lightly, I mean, hold them as, oh, but this is my experience. Yes, I don't understand it and have that be okay. Then what I have is this is my experience and something that feels tighter and smaller and perhaps more controlled. That doesn't
right.
feel like truth anymore. That feels like the old.
Right. And so when that experience is there, when you can begin to feel that there is that divinity is love, is the nature of it is safe beingness, that the God self, the divine underlying current of unitary wholeness, is by its nature infinite love, and it's the source of your own being. It's the restlessness inside us that we all feel that makes us grab for this and grab for that and try to always feed that hungry ghost, right? Mm-hmm. But what's inside of that hollowness inside us that we're always trying to feed with experiences is a tremendous yearning for complete fulfillment, mm-hmm. which is a yearning to return to our own source, our own nature. You know, our own inherent nature, which is infinite love. We're all drawn, you know, what healthy person doesn't want to be loved and love? Right. You know, it's we all want to be connected.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we find in those human connections that moment where there's that aha, you know, when you look into the eyes of someone mm-hmm. that you love and you just feel that moment where there's not two of you. There is just that moment of awe, right? Mm-hmm. And in nature, we have it too. You know, we find it in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But through meditation, we cultivate it. Through deep meditation, we cultivate that moment of unitary wholeness to be able to sink beyond all the mental thoughts and so on into that wholeness, which is love. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a very trusted space, a space where there, it's your source, it's your home. It's mm-hmm. not, it's where things really are safe. And I think that's the realization that comes over time, is that mm-hmm. that unitary consciousness, that one self, that presence, God self, whatever your term is the safe haven in the storm. We've been conditioned from the beginning, as part of our culture, to think that the material objects, these are what are safe, right? Material world is what is safe. Mm-hmm. But it's actually very transitory. Mm-hmm. And the safety lies in spirit. But it takes time to get that.
And then can you speak some to two things? One is about meditation and how that cultivates that. And then how you bring that into, I don't want to just say everyday life, but really what I'm thinking is how you bring that into creating what you're here to create, expressing that in through one's creative intelligence or God intelligence or whatever way you want to speak to that.
I think that we connect through meditation because meditation, whether you use a mantra or you ideate on a deity or a guru or you, whatever is your object of ideation, or even if you do body scanning, mm-hmm. whatever your ideation, you're just focusing the mind. I think scientists do it. You know, how does Einstein come up with his theories? Mm-hmm. He's just so concentrated. You know, the periodic table, the man who did that concentrated his mind mm-hmm. so much that it came in a dream. And then he wrote it down really quickly. Yeah. We concentrate our mind, whatever the means is, to the point where that single point of concentration on the infinite, that single point of concentration brings us beyond the scatteredness of the mind and our brain waves dropped out mm-hmm. from the beta, which is out in the world, to the relaxation of alpha, to the theta, which is deep, and to even delta, which is only in deep sleep, but also is in meditation. You can be conscious in a delta state in meditation. And then you have access to the collective unconscious. Then you have access to the unitary whole of being.
Yeah.
And so you drop your conscious mind through your subconscious into your unconscious mind, which is becoming conscious, right? You know,
right.
And you're able to experience the whole of being but you're not, your thoughts aren't like all over the place worrying about the groceries and the utility bill, right? You know, but you're now in unitary wholeness, and the same awareness that worries about the utility bill and the groceries can drop down, and all your psychological issues and your thoughts and worries and so on can drop down into unitary wholeness. And that focus of concentration, dharana, into dhyana, into meditation, and into samadhi, into complete absorption in the one, that's the process of meditation.
So that focus that you speak to isn't exactly a mental focus. It's almost a letting go into something that is beyond. And to me, I think of it, because I've been doing so much research over the years into quantum physics and thinking of it as that field of potentiality.
Yes.
And as we're able to tap into that, as we're able to tap into that unity of consciousness by dropping, we get to bring forward through us, through our whatever our own unique expression is, something from that
into our lives. And in fact, it can transform our very nature of relationship to reality. Because when we see self and other, mm-hmm. we see two. We live in a dual experience. Mm-hmm. We may meditate and we can feel this unitary wholeness and this deep peace in meditation. We come out of meditation, we're immediately in this duality. but if we keep focusing it, the non-dual experience comes into view. And the non-dual experience is that not only in meditation, but in waking reality, I have this beautiful plant in front of me. Every leaf on the plant is the form of God. Every person you meet is the form of the one. Everything is the form of the one. The whole of creation is within the one. I am in all things, and all things are in me. And our whole perception of the field of being and the reality of living in this world changes. And what could be very mundane can be transformed into the exquisite beauty of divine being manifesting in the multiple forms and colors of creation. Mm-hmm. And that being is within you, in every molecule of your body, and every atom, in the subatomic particles and the waves, in everything that is. I mean, we know from physics how deeply we're connected, how everything is mostly space. Mm-hmm. And deeper than that, it's all consciousness. It's all being. And, you know, new physics is coming. The consciousness is the base of the universe, not the material world. And so we can live in that awareness, not just in meditation, but there's a time that as you keep the company of the great, if you will, that it sort of wears off on you, and your actual perceptual field begins to change, and you can feel this unity while being in the world.
It's so beautifully said, Maitreyi. I really appreciate that. And in doing that, it underlines or highlights that this really is not a passive process. often people think of meditation in a very as being passive, but I've always talked about it as we have to be active in it, because we have to receive it, we have to surrender into it, we have to open to it. And then I'm interested in what you have experienced and seen and perhaps taught about how we then have impact in the world or on the world.
It's my feeling that the greatest impact you can have in the world is to be connected to the infinite, that it heals, that profound consciousness is what brings order and harmony to the universe. Mm. And to any degree that our world is out of balance and out of alignment with the harmony of the universe, the more that conscious, intelligent essence flows through us into this world, and the more we flow into that, we relax into that, the more that just by holding that space changes the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more we can share it with others, the better. But I think just divine being present, like the sun again, coming through the hole in the clouds, shining down on the earth. Yeah. It if we can hold that hole in the clouds open, it helps warm the earth. It helps to bring the light of the infinite into this plane of existence just by being. And then, of course, whatever actions our own individual unique dharma, mm-hmm. our own path leads us onto, because we each have our own unique expression, our own unique mm-hmm. way. You know, dharma is that which we have, our dharma, our human dharma, which is to find our way home to the source. Mm-hmm. We have, each of us are like a unique flower in the garden of creation and in the mind of the infinite. Mm-hmm. And we each have our own unique blossoming to do. And in that, we have our own path, our own, whether we're meant to be an activist, whether we're meant to build a bridge, whether we're meant to take care of a home or children, whether we're meant to, you know, as long as we're living our dharma and not somebody else's, mm-hmm. where the trouble is, we try to live something that isn't us.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of suffering comes in.
Yes.
Thank you. That what you just shared is so, for me, so important, so essential to realize that it isn't, and I don't know if you'll agree or disagree, but I think that it's along the lines of what you were just saying, that it's not about just sitting in meditation and going off and doing that, and that's our life, but it's then seeing how it is that we bring that light, what form that we bring that in, what is our path to allow that light to shine.
And to bring it so that, to deepen into that enough that between sitting in meditation and being in the world, it's the same.
Yeah. Mm.
It's the same. The divinity is everywhere. All this that is form, you know, it's molecules, it's atoms, mm-hmm. it's waves. It's consciousness. It's all manifest and unmanifest in the deep, deep love of the infinite, in the heart of the infinite. Mm. You're melted into the one. There is a deep, powerful transformation of being. And as that transformation deepens, this world is not separate. And I think for me, in my own personal journey, that was a big learning that took a lifetime of, mm-hmm. is to realize that the world, there isn't God in the world. There's only God. There's only the one.
Yeah.
There's only the one. And this creation of form is a spectrum of reality. You know, there's the whole molecular spectrum, there's the whole cosmic spectrum, and we live in this little spectrum here and someplace in the middle, maybe, you know. And but it is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So and so as you move deeper into spirit and into that love, this separation really isn't there. And I think in that we can bring through our own, whatever our mission in life is, we're also bringing through divine love, and we're bringing through divine energy. It transforms what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I almost want to say nothing because what you have shared is so beautiful and so feels so true. And in your book, you sharing your journey is really a gift. And I know that when you were from reading your book, that when you were asked to teach, to step outside of your comfort zone, very much so, that it moved you in the ways you needed to be moved, and that you were willing. Doesn't matter how long it took you to become willing.
Yes, I wasn't at first.
But you were willing. That's what I really want to acknowledge. And I thank you for that.
It's, you know, one thing that happens is it's wonderful to talk about the divine. It's wonderful to talk about divine love. It just brings it all into focus. And it's my joy to talk about it all.
Thank you. And could you let our listeners, our viewers, know where to find out more, where they can reach you?
Yeah, I have a website. It's at yogama.info. And soon to be yogama.org also. Yoga, Y-O-G-A-M-A, ma, yogama, dot info.
Okay, thank you. And that will be in the show notes, all the different ways for people to connect with you.
I also have podcasts, a podcast station on Podbean called, where I bring through these talks on spiritual life. That I feel I call them Baba Talks.
Mm-hmm.
I have a babatalks.info, which is my podcast station.
Oh, great.
And I have a YouTube station where a number of these talks are on also. And a number of them are on my website as well. So there's
lots of places to tap into more. Great. Thank you, Maitreyi, for your wisdom, for sharing yourself, and for sharing your journey.
Thank you. It's been really a delight to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners, our listening and viewing audience. Thanks for being with us today at Wisdom Talk Radio. And remember, you can find out more, find more of this wisdom, this discovery and illumination. Join us regularly for all of that. And you can find us on your favorite place to listen to podcasts, on YouTube for the video. And if you've enjoyed listening today, we do ask that you leave a review, because when you do that, you help spread the word. You help spread the love. I usually say help spread the wisdom, but really you're helping to spread the love. And that's part of how we transform the world. And if you want to know more about connecting with your own inner guidance system and with your own quantum source, take the quantum connection quiz today, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us here at Wisdom Talk Radio. We wish you well in your conscious explorations. For more information and to join in the conversation, Our website is wisdomtalkradio.com or at Wisdom Talk Radio on Facebook.